American conspiracies. Lies, lies, and more dirty lies that the government tells us. By Jesse Ventura, with Dick Russell. Narrated by George K. Wilson. Copyright 2010 by Jesse Ventura and Dick Russell. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Skyhorse Publishing and was produced in the year 2010 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Introduction. Why I'm writing about conspiracies in America. First of all, let's talk about what you won't find in this book. It's not about how extraterrestrials are abducting human beings, or the Apollo moon landing being a colossal hoax perpetrated by NASA, or that Barack Obama somehow is not a natural-born American citizen. I leave these speculations to others, not that I take them seriously. What this book will delve into are a number of things you don't see on TV or read about in the papers. The fact is, the media, the fourth branch of government that our founding fathers anticipated would speak truth to power and keep our democracy on track, has at least since the assassination of President Kennedy systematically ignored any conspiracy theory that might rock the establishment's boat. We are, excuse my French, in deep shit today because of this head-in-the-sand mentality. Let's start out by defining what a conspiracy is. My 2,347-page Webster's New Universal Unabridged Dictionary says, a planning and acting together secretly, especially for an unlawful or harmful purpose, such as murder or treason. Synonyms include plot, cabal, connivance, collusion. Hard to swallow? Think of the Roman senators who knocked off Julius Caesar in 44 BC. But I guess we've come a long way since then, right? Think Operation Northwoods, circa 1962. We'll get to that in due course. 7 Days in May. That novel about a military takeover during the Kennedy years wasn't far off the mark. Clearly, there's something going on in our national psyche that the New York Times and the Washington Post don't want to examine. Look at the popularity of The X-Files, or Mel Gibson in the movie Conspiracy Theory. Not that I think we should all booby-trap our doors and hide behind our file cabinets, but sometimes those lone nuts turn out to be right. I'm tired of being told that anybody who questions the status quo is part of the disaffected, alienated element of our society that ought to wake up and salute the flag. Maybe being patriotic is about raising the curtain and wondering whether we've really been told the truth about things like September 11th. I guess my questioning of the official line goes back to my school days, being taught that we had to fight in Vietnam to stop the domino effect of communism. That's what I learned in school. But my father, who was a World War II vet, took the exact opposite position at the dinner table. He said that was a load of crap, that the Vietnam War was all about somebody making big money off it. At first I thought my dad was crazy, because I could not believe they would lie to me in school. I fought with him over it, and he'd keep doing his best to debunk what I was saying. When I, in turn, went into the service and learned a whole lot more about Vietnam, I had the good fortune to come home and tell my father that he was right. Especially growing up in the Midwest, you never even contemplate that your government might not be telling the truth. You don't realize until you get much older that government is nothing but people, and people lie, especially where money and power are concerned. The next prong in the fork was when I got out of the Navy and went to junior college 1 year. Mark Lane came to give a talk, and I happened to hear him that night. That was the first time I ever paid attention to someone saying that what they told us about President Kennedy's assassination might not be true. I had been in junior high school when JFK was shot, and I remember the announcement over the loudspeakers and being sent back to our home rooms, and then school was dismissed. Like most everybody else, I saw Jack Ruby shoot Lee Harvey Oswald on TV, but I never questioned the Warren Commission's report that this disaffected ex-Marine had acted alone. After hearing Mark Lane that year, I was at the height of my wrestling career during the 1978 congressional hearings into the assassination, and didn't really start delving into any of this until wrestling changed in the mid-1980s. All of a sudden, I was no longer driving to towns, but flying. Sitting on airplanes all the time becomes extremely boring, so I started reading. Besides Mark Lane's plausible denial, I remember Jim Mars's Crossfire, and then a whole bunch of other books. When I'd see anything about the Kennedy assassination in the bookstores, I'd buy it. So as I got older and started looking back at the 60s, where every assassin was supposedly a lone nut, I began thinking, how could that be? These nuts who never told anybody anything or planned with anyone else, but just felt the need to go out and commit murders of prominent individuals, John and Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. The odds of that, I figured, simply defied all logic. It made me wonder who's really running the show, especially when you look at things they now admit never happened, like the Gulf of Tonkin incident that drew us into the Vietnam War. These things, as portrayed by our government and media, seem to be smaller segments of a bigger picture. It almost seems like a game of chess sometimes, where you don't understand the significance of one move until maybe a decade or two later, and start to see the results of how things turned out differently. You can bet that during my 4 years as the independent governor of Minnesota, 1999 to 2003, I was shielded from plenty of information, because they figured this guy will come and go. At the same time, I had some personal experiences that would tend to make a sane public servant start looking over his shoulder. As William Burroughs once said, paranoia is having all the facts. The first inkling that certain people inside the federal government were out to keep an eye on me came not long after my taking office. Sometime early in 1999, I was asked to attend a meeting in the basement of the Capitol building at a time when the state legislature was not in session. I was informed that the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, was conducting a training exercise that they hoped I'd be willing to participate in. Well, by this time, I knew that the CIA's original mission statement from 1947 meant they were only supposed to operate outside the U.S. The FBI was the outfit with domestic jurisdiction. But being an ex-Navy SEAL and a patriotic citizen, I basically felt I should cooperate. Besides, I was curious as to what this was really all about. Down there in the bowels of the building, some fledgling CIA operatives sat waiting for me in a conference room. There were 23 in all. I counted heads. They ranged in age from right out of college to what looked like retired people, both men and women, a very diverse group. Your average middle-class neighborhood types. Except all of them with the CIA, which was kind of chilling when you think about it. I was placed in the middle of a big circle of chairs, and they all sat there, staring at me, with notebooks on their laps. Well, before they could start asking me questions, I said I had a few for them. First of all, what were they doing here in the FBI's territory? Nobody seemed to want to say. Then I started going around the room, asking for their names and their job descriptions. Maybe three or four answered, but the others dummied up. Either they'd describe what they do without identifying who they were, or neither. Considering that I'm an elected governor, I thought this was not only rude, but rather brash. So I told the group, well, being that you're not being too cooperative with me, it's going to be difficult for me to cooperate with you. They asked their questions anyway, and it was interesting. They all focused on how we campaigned, how we achieved what we did, and did I think we truly could win when we went into the campaign. Basically, How had the independent wrestler candidate pulled this off? Sometimes I answered, and other times I didn't, just to mess with them a little. They remained very cordial and proper. Nobody raised their voice or made me feel I was being interrogated, but I've got to say it was one of the strangest experiences of my life. I was baffled by the whole experience. When I got home that day, I called my friend Dick Marcinko. He wrote all the Rogue Warrior books, created the anti-terrorist SEAL Team 6, and I figured he'd probably know more about how the CIA operates than anybody else I knew. Dick started laughing as I told him the scenario of what had happened. I asked why he thought this was so funny. "Well, I'm not privy to exactly why they were there," he said. "But I could give you my educated guess." He went on. "They didn't see you coming. You were not on the radar screen, and all of a sudden you won a major election in the United States of America. The election caught them with their pants down, and their job is to gather intelligence and make predictions. Now, next to Bill Clinton, you're probably the most famous politician in America." Then Dick added this. "I think they're trying to see if there are any more of you on the horizon." So were they trying to gather information to ensure this would never happen again? I wondered, was I that much of a threat? Not too long after that meeting, I found out something else, and it stunned me. I reveal this for the first time in my memoir, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, and it raised a lot of eyebrows. It just so happens there is a CIA operative inside every state government. They are not in executive positions, in other words, not appointed by the governor, but permanent state employees. While governors come and go, they keep working, holding down legitimate jobs, but with a dual identity. In Minnesota, this person was fairly high up, serving at the deputy commissioner level. I wasn't sworn to secrecy about this, but only I and my chief of staff were allowed to know their identity. I had to go meet with the person, and later when somebody else took over the cover post for the CIA, I had to know who the new agent was. I still have no idea what they're doing there. Are they spying? Checking out what direction the state government is going and reporting back to someone at headquarters in Langley? But who? And for what purpose? I mean, are they trying to ferret out traitors in the various states? Or maybe just dissidents like me? Anyhow, I wasn't told the reason and was simply left to ponder how come our Constitution is being violated. Let's say it gave me pause. I've seen it firsthand, and that's another reason why I am writing this book, because I believe it's vital to our democracy to see the hidden pattern that's been undermining this country for most of my lifetime. The Bush administration, which made lying into an art form that took us into the Iraq War, was in a way the logical extension of all the cover-ups, crimes, and conspiracies that preceded it. Researching this book has been fascinating, but I wouldn't call it fun. When you look back on how the power brokers have deceived us over the years, it gets pretty damn depressing. Maybe that's why so many people prefer to remain in denial. The way I look at it, though, is that old truism from the Bible. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Until we come clean about our recent history, there's no way to move forward and return to the representative democracy that our forefathers intended America to be. We'll start by looking back at the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. If you're like me, you certainly know the name of John Wilkes Booth, just like we do Lee Harvey Oswald. Ever wonder why lone assassins always have middle names set down too? Maybe so we'll get them firmly implanted in our minds. But how many of us were taught that Booth had 8 known co-conspirators, and that it's never been resolved as to whether he may have been involved with someone in Lincoln's own circle? Then we'll cut to the 1930s, when Franklin D. Roosevelt got elected in the midst of the Great Depression. That's when a cabal of wealthy industrialists using a Veterans Front group embarked on a plot to get rid of FDR and institute a fascist-style regime in this country. They'd probably have succeeded, except they chose the wrong man to lead the way, Major General Smedley Butler, a true American hero who'd twice been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. Butler blew the whistle to Congress, which held hearings that exposed the whole scheme. And guess who was among the conspirators, along with J.P. Morgan, DuPont, and other titans of finance? None other than Prescott Bush, grandfather of George W. and father of George H.W. Prescott also happened to be a business partner and American banker for a German steel and coal baron who funded Hitler's rise to power. I'm going to devote several chapters to the assassinations of the 1960s, because in my view, the truth has been covered up about all of them. We'll start with the one I've studied the longest, and that's the conspiracy that took President Kennedy's life on November 22, 1963. I believe our country has never been the same since that terrible day, which established a precedent for treachery in our contemporary political life that we're still living with. I don't believe you can ever form an opinion and say, this is absolutely what happened. That's one of the reasons the perpetrators succeed, because when the most powerful entity in the world is doing the covering up, it becomes extremely difficult to know that you can ever lay the truth completely bare. I think I probably read a scenario that's true, but there might be several others as provocative and just as well true. Or they might all be intertwined into one. The criticism of Oliver Stone's film JFK, which I've watched many times, is that he just threw all the mud at the wall to see which part sticks. Well, he had to. He was putting it all out there, and letting you, the viewer, decide what you wanted to take home to the bank. It didn't make it any less of a great film, because Oliver couldn't pinpoint exactly what went down. One aspect I'll be scrutinizing when it comes to Oswald is whether there were, in fact, two of them. This is one of the most intriguing parts of the case, because it clears up the fact that a number of witnesses saw Oswald in different places at the same time. It also raises some huge questions about how the military and the CIA might have been using Oswald and a look-alike in their intelligence games. The use of doubles is a classic intel modus operandi. The assassinations of Malcolm X, 1965, and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., 1968, also are not what the official versions would have us believe. When Malcolm X was gunned down in New York's Audubon Ballroom, it looked then like a clear case of a power struggle within the black Muslims. The men convicted of the killing were all fanatic followers of Elijah Muhammad, from whom Malcolm had split away. We didn't know at the time about COINTELPRO and other secret FBI programs actively disrupting civil rights organizations. J. Edgar Hoover's FBI, it turns out, was extremely worried about an alliance between Malcolm and Martin. The night before his assassination, one of Malcolm's murderers is said to have met with an FBI undercover agent, and the CIA was heavily involved with shadowing Malcolm's every move. In the case of Dr. King, his own family has said that they don't believe James Earl Ray committed the crime. The Kings, in fact, brought a wrongful death lawsuit that resulted in a jury returning a verdict in 1999 that governmental agencies were parties to a conspiracy. If you didn't hear about that, it's because nobody from the big media covered the proceedings. And O.J. Simpson's was the trial of the century, with blow-by-blow TV coverage. Here, our government declares a national holiday on Dr. King's birthday, at the same time it's still publicly proclaiming that he was killed by a lone racist. Maybe that's because we're really talking culpability by the police, military, FBI, and organized crime. Robert Kennedy was assassinated 2 months after Dr. King, right after winning the California primary on the way to the Democratic nomination. Sirhan Bishara Sirhan, in front of many witnesses in the pantry of L.A.'s Ambassador Hotel, fired a number of times at the senator and appeared to be the sole assassin. Well, turns out that Sirhan's gun held 8 bullets, but new audio testing on the only known recording of the shots indicates that there were at least 10 fired. But if Sirhan was the assassin, to this day he doesn't have any memory of pulling the trigger. Even at his trial, lawyers wondered whether he'd been programmed through hypnosis or drugs or some combination. Was Sirhan part of MK Ultra, a grim CIA program to control human behavior, where most of the records were destroyed in 1973? That's a question we'll look into later in this book. Along comes Watergate, and ultimately the resignation of Richard Nixon. Assuredly a not-so-nice guy who obstructed justice and had his staff commit all manner of illegal acts, was dumb or arrogant enough to tape himself, and deserved to otherwise have been impeached and sent to prison, if Gerald Ford hadn't pardoned him. But what if this outrageous chapter in our recent history has an even darker side? What if Nixon was set up? The tapes revealed his obsession with the whole Bay of Pigs thing, which many experts believe was code for the Kennedy assassination. As president, he was demanding the CIA release to his White House all of its files on that period. Nixon was nothing if not self-protective, so he may have just wanted to know what dirt the spies had on him. Or maybe he wanted the goods on them. It's dog-eat-dog in his realm. This much I've figured out. A whole lot of the Watergate cast of characters tracks back to the JFK mystery, including most all the burglars who conducted the fateful break-in. I know this next chapter might seem on the fringe, but we've been sold at least a partial bill of goods on the infamous Jonestown cult suicides in 1978, where 900-some followers of Jim Jones met their demise in Guyana. The chief medical examiner in Guyana actually concluded that more than 700 of the victims had been murdered. Before he founded his People's Temple, Jones had some very suspicious ties to the CIA, as well as doing some informing for the FBI. Ever hear about the Jonestown survivors filing a $63 million lawsuit in October 1981? They were alleging that the State Department and CIA conspired to enhance the economic and political powers of James Warren Jones, conducting mind control and drug experimentation. Hold the Kool-Aid and read on. What I regard as the first of 3 stolen presidential elections in our recent history happened in 1980. That's when Ronald Reagan's people made a secret deal with Iran to delay the release of those 52 American hostages being held over there. This is known as the October Surprise, because that's what the Republicans were afraid President Carter might pull off, free the hostages, and win a second term. Instead, George H.W. Bush, and about-to-be CIA Director William Casey, among others, arranged to supply Iran with weapons and unblock their assets in U.S. banks. In exchange, the hostages got to stay a little longer under house arrest. Doesn't the timing of their release, 20 minutes after Reagan finished his inaugural address, kind of make you wonder? It sure did me, even at the time. Next, we'll take a look at our government on drugs. At the same time Nancy Reagan was telling our kids to just say no, America's backing of the Nicaraguan Contra movement was being funded mainly by cocaine traffickers and money launderers. A report by the CIA's own Inspector General finally confirmed this in 1998 and showed that the operation tracked straight into Oliver North's office in Reagan's National Security Council. Though once again, the major media pretty much ignored the story. Of course, the drug trade had been part and parcel of our involvement in the Vietnam War, just as it is today in Afghanistan. The CIA's secret missions are all financed with drug money, because then they don't have to account for it. It's time to end this corruption once and for all, starting with the legalization of marijuana. You can't talk politics since the millennium without delving into the conspiracies that resulted in George W. Bush stealing two elections. We all know the Supreme Court handed him the presidency in 2000 by stopping the recount in Florida. All but forgotten, though, are the illegal actions taken before the election by Brother Jeb, then Florida's governor, and Secretary of State Catherine Harris, that deprived thousands of citizens of their right to vote. Not to mention the touchscreen voting machines controlled by Republican bigwigs that suddenly switched votes from Al Gore to Bush. These machines perpetrated more widespread fraud in 2004. The exit polls and early vote count showed John Kerry the clear winner in Ohio, until everything shifted around in the middle of the night. That's when a computer expert named Michael Connell, a crony of Karl Rove's, transmitted the vote count to private partisan computer servers down in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Connell can't tell us about it, though. He was killed in the crash of his private plane soon after the 2008 election, when he was on the verge of blowing the whistle. Many suspect foul play. Surprise! If the Bush-Cheney crowd could thieve elections and bump off potential tattlers, what about September 11th? I never wanted to believe anything different than we were told about what happened on that terrible day. Even though, having been in the military, I wondered right away, where were our jets to intercept the four hijacked planes? How could our air defenses have failed so badly? Since then, I've done considerable research into the events surrounding 9/11. In 2008, I spent weeks on the road, where my investigative team and I conducted interviews with witnesses for the pilot episode I'd contracted to do of a new TV series for True TV. And I've come to a frightening conclusion. Either the Bush administration had advance knowledge and let the attack happen in order to justify their future agenda, including going to war against Iraq, or they orchestrated the terrorist plot themselves. I know that sounds radical, if not treasonous, but there's a whole truth movement out there that thinks the same thing and is demanding answers. The 9/11 Commission, it's now abundantly clear, was involved in the same massive cover-up as the Warren Commission. Toward the end of this book, I'm going to tell you what I learned firsthand and what I've determined to be the strongest evidence of a 9/11 conspiracy. Now, thanks to those same Bush people, our economy has gone into a free fall and we're in the biggest crisis of that sort since the Great Depression. Is it a stretch to include how this came about in a book on conspiracies? I don't think so. Something definitely smells about how Bush Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson ended up making Goldman Sachs, the company he served as CEO until 2006, the dominant player among investment bankers through the bailout. Then there's the role of the New York Fed under Timothy Geithner, now Obama's Treasury Secretary, when it came to loaning AIG billions to pay back certain special creditors. The company, deemed too big to fail, is, if truth be known, rotten to the core, and with long-standing ties to the CIA. The simple fact is, for 20 years, Wall Street was run by shady dealers who pushed the laws to their limits and then flouted them openly until they became blurred beyond any possibility of enforcement. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the government agency set up to regulate our capital markets, ended up totally captured by the financial elites. And the Federal Reserve that's supposed to safeguard our currency? Nothing but accomplices in the biggest swindle of all time. This is, to my thinking, about as big a conspiracy as you can imagine, and one with deep historical roots that need to be dug up and exposed. We've got a Clean Air Act. How about a Clear the Air Act that gives us a fighting chance to restore the Republic and the ideals we once stood for? In the concluding chapter of this book, I want to talk about my biggest fear, that certain people may be just waiting in the wings for enough disgruntled, hungry citizens to rise up so the real crackdown can begin. I'm sure that's not what President Obama wants to do, and I hope he's able to set us back on course. But the legal groundwork was laid under Bush for a whole new ballgame. In fact, 10 months before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld approved an updated version of the Army's so-called Continuity of Government Plan, with ways and means to suspend the Constitution in the event of civil unrest. Secret memos drafted by Bush's team would allow a president to send the military to wage war against American citizens, to drag people from their homes and without trial, hold them at some Guantanamo-type facility indefinitely. Basically, to kiss the Bill of Rights goodbye. So brace yourselves, folks. Even with a change of administration for the better, we're not out of the woods. Like the poet Robert Frost once wrote, "The woods are dreary, dark, and deep." And we'd better be prepared for a rough ride through the wilderness that's been closing in around us. That's why I'm putting together this book. We need to understand where we've been, and it's not a pretty picture, in order to know where we need to go. When some people refer to me as a conspiracy theorist, I respond laughingly and say, well, the government is too. For the most part, they've never proven any of their theories. Right now, I'm a skeptic about anything I read officially from the government. They don't tell the whole truth. They often seem to have an entirely different agenda. That's disheartening, to realize that what you read in the newspapers and the history books may not be accurate. I think the other side of the story needs to be published somewhere. And whether or not people believe it, at least it should be out there. So, let's begin with the hour of America's first great crisis, the Civil War, and what we need to remember about the assassination of our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln.